Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Shooter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. Today, I am not joined by my co-host. Matt is currently trapped at a Trunk or Treat events, so he will not be joining us. He's been there for about 3 hours. I told him to Spartan kick some soccer moms and get out of there, but apparently he wasn't able to do so. For our guests today, some very special guests, we have Captain John Bodziak, Staff Sergeant Christian Cachola, and Sergeant John Treat. They all recently came back from the RMOSC, which is the Royal Marines Operational Shooting Competition. Real quick, and we'll start with you, Bod. Can you just tell us how this came to be?
Absolutely. So this is one of those competitions that goes back quite a while. You know, some of the trophies that they had were over 100 years old. But as far as us getting back into it, you know, COVID put a big damper on a lot of these competitions, both the ones that we hosted as well as a lot of the international ones. And so this was something that when we do our when we bring the Brits over and have them come and train with us and shoot in our competition, our Marine Corps Marksmanship competition here on the East Coast, they use this as their counterpoint to that. And they wanted to revive this, and this was their first big try at it since COVID. And so naturally they came to ours. They're like, hey, we want you guys to come over to RMOSC for us as part of Exercise Commando Strike. We said, absolutely, we'd love to. And we started working it out and ended up figuring out how to get us over into the UK and do a little bit of shooting over there across the pond.
Yeah, it's super cool. As soon as we found out about it, we absolutely wanted to have you guys over and just talk about it. At what point did you guys know for sure that this was going to be a thing?
As soon as there were a couple different points, really. You know, planning wise, we were planning like we were going from the get go. As soon as we got the invite, we were all about it. We were going for it. We were plan for success, and we were getting nods all the way up, but it wasn't really until about 2 months to a month and a half out that we got the final okay. You know, as with everything, people above us, especially when it comes to international level, have a good say, and we got the green light. They were happy to have us go over there and represent the Marine Corps in this competition, United States Marine Corps, I should say, in this competition. Mm-hmm. And so we got the nod, and yeah, so there was a little bit of time, but there was enough time for us to still do all the planning and execution that we needed to in order to make it a thing.
Yeah, that's great. But it's always different when you approach it from the officer versus enlisted level. So yeah. Chris and Treat, we'll start with you, Chris. How did it look like from your level? Was it a lot of back and forth, just in terms of all this coming together?
So from my point of view, it was something that Gunny Ram, he was trying to push. I mean, it sounded like it was something that we have done in the past, and he wanted to continue that tradition. And when we talk about, you know, Marine Corps shooting team representing internationally, this is like the premier or one of the bigger competitions we could do that at. So the rifle team just came back from Camp Perry, Ohio. So we're still kind of coming down from the rifle season since we just wrapped it up. And at that point, maybe a week or two after, that's where we found out we were going, and just had to shift gears and shift into the training regimen that we set up, and switch our mindsets essentially, because we went from a very specific course of fire to now adding in a lot of physical movement and whatnot, while still maintaining a high level of accuracy.
Yeah, and we definitely want to talk about what you guys did in terms of preparation for shooting and the physicality. But I guess the next question I have is, and Preet, we'll start with you on this one. How did Weapons Training Battalion go about choosing which personnel were ultimately going to go over there to Scotland?
Yeah, so from my understanding, it was getting a good blend of individuals. So if we sent like just the pistol team, we'd probably win every pistol event. But no, getting everybody from different backgrounds within internally from the teams, because there is pistol, there is rifle, and then them also adding the action style and the PRS style stages this year. A good blend was definitely a good idea. The right approach to this, the problem of a different style of shooting that is similar to high power, but not quite that. There are more par times and not so much long periods of time. But yeah, definitely a blended background was what we were looking for and what we got, and it ended up working out in our favor.
Nice. Bond, from your perspective, did they give you a certain number of people that you could work with? And were you able to massage that number some? Did it decrease? How flexible did you have to be with personnel selection?
Absolutely. So when we got the invite, they actually were really great about sending us essentially their equivalent to an LOI. And so in that, it's basically dictated, hey, each team should be about 9 guys. But when we were looking through it, you know, it was, okay, do we absolutely have to send 9 guys? Is there any wiggle room to that, like you were just talking about? And one of the guys that was supposed to be part of the team was essentially just a pit puller, just a dude to help out. And in parentheses, right after it, when it went into the breakout, was specific to Royal Marines. So it was like, okay, so we only need 8. Great. We can send 8 a lot more feasibly. Even though it's only one guy, you know, everything makes a difference. And so that ended up dictating to, yep, our team's going to be 8. We picked 8 guys, 8 solid dudes, and rolled with it.
Nice. One more question, not for you, Bod, but for you, Treat. You mentioned that they added action and PRS. Was that a factor of, I guess, them coming over to the Mi'kmaq in 2016 or getting some influences from the way you guys are running the division matches and bringing that back? Or is that just them keeping a pulse or keeping a finger on the pulse of competitive shooting around the world and seeing what's in vogue?
Right. So I believe they got it from Operation Longshot from FY23 because they did come out here, compete at East, do some training with us during that time. We showed them everything, how to use practice score. They have it, but we gave them some more info that we have on it because we use it quite frequently, a little bit more than they do. They saw the stages. They liked them. They had fun when they came out and trained with us. I think they saw the practicality behind it and wanted to try to apply it to their kind of version of our, I'd say, championships, just like different style with different Marines. And it seemed like a lot of the guys that we were talking to liked it. A lot of the Royal Marines out there seemed to enjoy it. They had fun. We gave them some tips and everything. They were very receptive to it. So hopefully it kind of sparked something, but they definitely enjoy it. And same issue that they have, that we have, is like the range restrictions. They have weirder ones, just as restrictive, but you're out in the middle of a field, but you can't shoot towards that mountain, but that one's okay because there's a village somewhere back there. But yeah, they have very similar issues just on the different side of the pond, but they're working through it just like we have to.
Yeah. So you're telling me a professional military force experienced action shooting and PRS and instantly saw the value that they would add to the warfighting skill set?
No way.
Okay. No way. Yeah. Anyway, that's all I'll say on that. So moving forward, we just did an episode with Stephen Corson and Peyton Garcia about traveling abroad. And there's a lot of wrinkles associated with bringing all your guns and your ammo and all that stuff outside of the United States. What issues did you all have to tackle logistically, bring in yourselves and all your stuff, not only to a foreign country, to a foreign military base? And Bog, we'll start with you for this one.
You know, I'm so happy you asked this. We had quite the experience. I'd say quite the full experience when it came to travel. You know, the whole military aspect of, you know, submitting everything you need to make sure that all you and your guys can go, really wasn't too bad. It was very similar to how we do whenever we travel for our McMix over to Okinawa. You know, just some little things different for the country, here and there. Definitely some interesting restrictions that we ran into for rental vehicles that are very specific, especially when it comes to how they equate sizes of rental vehicle to who's allowed to drive them. Luckily, also, almost all the vehicles over there are manuals, but we have a couple of motorheads on the team that very much enjoyed the challenge of shifting with the other hand. So we were able to overcome that pretty well. But the biggest obstacle, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more and how we overcame this with the help of our foreign brothers in arms, was whenever you travel, there's always a chance that the airline might misplace your luggage, or that, you know, you're going to have a delayed flight and miss your connection. And we just got so lucky that we did it all. The weather in DC when we flew to our connection was absolute garbage, and it caused us to be delayed to the point that our connecting flight took off about 2 minutes after we physically landed on the tarmac in our connecting airport. So because of that, we had to get rescheduled. We didn't get rescheduled to fly out to London until the following day around in the evening. So we were hanging out in our connecting location for about 24 hours.
Yeah. Was that in Charlotte?
Yeah, we got to sightsee in Charlotte.
I remember seeing your guys' stories. I'm like, that's like the strangest group of people. I would never expect them to just hang out casually. I'm like, oh, wait, it's Charlotte. They're stranded. Like, I'm just being a dumbass. But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we got to experience the wonderful, wonderful everything that is downtown Charlotte. And then thank God we hopped on a connecting flight from Charlotte to London. And then when we were popping from London over to our destination in Edinburgh, there was a little bit more of a hubbub there because we had to jump from a American airline to a British Airways. And whenever you're doing that, it's always fun because they don't always give you the ticket for your international leg that when you change airlines. Some of us did get a ticket, some of us didn't get a ticket, which was weird. And then when we arrived in Edinburgh, we got just about all of our luggage. However, the important luggage, other than our own, which is our flax and Kevlars, which the entirety of this competition is conducted in flak and Kevlar, as well as a number of our personal shooting belts, kind of got misplaced and lost in transit. So we did end up getting them back, which is fantastic, but we didn't get them back until like the last 3 days of the competition. So essentially it was we had them for the last 2 days of shooting, put them right back in the same boxes and brought them back to the U.S. Luckily, no issues with that whatsoever. And customs was nice for what it was as far as how quickly it went in Charlotte on our way back. So, yeah, there are definitely, you know, a couple little speed bumps, a couple of roadblocks that we just had to roll with that made, you know, submitting DTS on the back end always a good time. Overall, you know, we still got there. We were able to do what we needed to do and bring back some more shiny stuff along the way.
Hell yeah. That's what it's all about. International. I don't ever think I've talked to a person about international travel that has told me that everything went swimmingly. Christian, you were laughing and kind of punching the air in the background there while he was talking, but anything from you to add?
other than you know, one of the bags being tied to my name, he's pretty much right. Everything was very stressful once we found out our bags were just nowhere to be found, either bouncing between London or Edinburgh. We'd be calling the airlines every day just to get an update to see where our bags were at, and nobody could seem to give us a solid answer on where our bags were located up until maybe, I think it was our last week, it was the last Monday of the competition, and we finally got a hold of a representative, and he was able to pretty much set up a pickup at the Edinburgh airport, which was, I think, an hour drive from where the base was. So as soon as we set that up, we started driving over there, and finally got our bags and all our kit, and it was just a lovely time when it comes. Yeah.
Oh man, anything to add, Trey?
No comment. I despise everything about that airport.
Edinburgh, was it a small like regional airport, or was it an actual like?
So it's like a like our regional airport, where it's just connecting flights, nothing like cross country or international. Pretty small. Like, I swear 5 people work there. The one lady that's working the counter, the kiosk up front, checking you in, is also walking to the back to collect bags to take to the company that delivers them that are lost. There's also a ton of lost luggage there. They were rolling out carts and carts like every 10 minutes of other people's lost luggage. And while we're waiting there to look for ours and ask them questions, there's just more and more carts rolling through.
Did you, since they are also fluent in the English language, did you ask them that if it was their side duty to recreate the end of Indiana Jones with lost luggage?
I was too frustrated with everything going on, trying to contact people with the 20 phone numbers I've added to my phone that none of them answered.
Here's another question. What did you guys do for cell service? I mean, so traveling abroad, cell service is always an issue, right? It's something I've had to figure out every time that I've gone abroad. So did that add to the frustration, or did you guys just have roaming? Like, was that pretty easy to figure out?
So personally for me, I had Verizon. I just tried to not use any data and limit myself. I'm not very connected to my phone. I download some offline games to entertain me if I'm stuck in the squad bay. Outside of that, I would occasionally text my wife or call her once every other day or so. But yeah, I try to limit it because it cost me like $20 a day if I did use it. And I'm kind of thrifty, if you will. And cheap. Yeah. I'm also cheap.
I would think, no, you don't need to convince me there. Yeah, those international roaming charges, no joke. Another question that I just thought of that I didn't necessarily write down, but I saw a lot of really great footage come out of this match. And Chris, we want to do like an episode specifically for Chris, but his background is PAO. Like when I first met him, he was shooting in 2 different ways. You know, he's competing with a gun, but he also was running camera. And extremely talented in capturing video and also just like, you know, pictures as well. Did you bring a lot of your stuff with you, and was part of the reason that you went along with this squad was to not only help them, you know, get medals, but also to document the entire thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to say like part of the reason I'm on a team / what I contribute is my abilities as a photographer and videographer and stuff like that, like running social media. That's what I grew up in the Marine Corps doing. So taking those skills, translating them over, and working with the Marine Corps shooting team, it's been a challenge balancing, you know, being a competitor, instructor, and also doing these additional duties, because, you know, a typical PAO shopper, CompStrat shopper, the guys that are Marines, active duty Marines listening to the podcast, it's not a one-man gig. It's at least a team of 3 or 4, including an officer that does a lot of the coordination. And to be a one-man media group, it's pretty difficult. I do rely on some of the guys to help, you know, pick up my camera every once in a while and just experiment, take photos, or help me take video here and there. Shout out to Sam Nelson. He helps me a lot on the team whenever I'm making products. But yeah, just I'm very drawing a blank on the word right now, but passionate about telling the story of like individuals and like just breaking the title of Marine away for just a second to remind everyone that we're all human beings. And that's part of the reason I wanted to go. It's because I could tell a story of not only the Marine Corps, but like the eight individuals that went. And yeah, just being in a different country, that it's an amazing experience on its own. So like all the footage I got, all the things I could play around with, it was a fun time for me, not only being a competitor, but being a Comstrat Marine.
Yeah, absolutely. Comstrat Marines already do some pretty cool stuff, but it must occur to you at some point while you were videoing a competition with your teammates in a foreign country with other foreign Marines. Yeah, that must have been pretty sweet. If you're following the Marine Corps shooting team on social media, like I would say that Chris is, you know, he is responsible for a lot of the production value and a lot of the content that goes up there, which is very, very high quality. And like I said, we definitely want to delve into your story at a future time, Chris. We're going to have you back on for a focused interview. But for the time being, we're going to press on. So part of the RMOSC is a competition between the COs and sergeant majors of these different forces. And so as a part of this competition, Colonel Jones and Sergeant Major Weapons Training Battalion were going to compete. So how did you tailor the training treat as the pistol team coach, knowing that the CO and Sergeant Major were going to be competing? How did you go about creating that program?
So I based the program off of the match. During the time of the training, the whole month, the month and a half that we had prior to actually going over there and conducting the event, we just were basing all of our training off of older match books that we had found or had left over in the office. And the match was always a specific, like one of the pistol, I guess, courses of fire. So it's very static. It's there's no movement, no reloads under time. It's just draw, get your hits. Originally it was transition, draw, get hits, and fairly strict timeline. So we were trying to, with my limited amount of time, work on fundamentals and then also get the lowest hanging fruit, as Alex likes to say all the time, and work on weapon transitions because I know they don't do that a lot. And then as things go on, we find out, oh, they're not doing transitions. And then by the time we got there, we got the actual match book and they're just shooting what would have been the falling tiles match. So they just were pretty much having to shoot, it looks like a plate rack, but it's just 10 orange clays that two people will have. I believe it was 10 rounds each. Mm-hmm. For their match. They would knock out as many as you can. And if you get all of them, whoever knocked them all out first one would win. And luckily for us, Colonel Jones loves to shoot plate racks, and that was his forte. And the downside to all of this was it was only our CO and Sergeant Major versus the Royal Marines CO and Sergeant Major, or one of the units. Yeah, there was some attendance issues, I'm sure no fault of their own, but just how things were working out for them. There was only one other that could participate, so it was just a head-on-head, and our CO and Sergeant Major ended up winning. So it was great. It was by one plate, but a win's a win, as we kept telling them. So they got to come home with a trophy and get some cool swag for their offices.
Yeah. And I mean, knowing that this is Colonel Jones' final year of command, that's a really sweet feather in his cap. And, you know, out of all the cool things he's done in the Marine Corps, I'd have to imagine that ranks up among there. The other part of this match is that it's a really physical match. And I've heard some of the horror stories from you guys in terms of the ordeals that you had to go through. How did you all prepare on the physical fitness side? And this question is for you, Bod.
So I got to give credit where credit's due. Staff Sergeant Stewart is a specimen of a man, and he really picked up on that and put together a solid training plan. About three times a week, we'd get together, and we would do some basic strength training. We would do runs. So we would do a nice 4-mile run on Application Trail down and back to start the week. Middle of the week, we'd do some strength training, and then we switched up a little bit later to do some sprint work. Later in the week, we would do a mobility routine. So we would do some kind of stretching and active recovery type stuff to make sure we were trying to hit everything on top of what we were already doing for shooting. A lot of other things we knew were going to be moving under load. So as we got closer, we started to tailor it a little bit more to where we'd be doing farmer's carries. We would be doing a lot more items that would put us in similar positions where we would have to move and do everything under load, to include everything that we would do on training on the range. We would be wearing full kit for those durations once we got closer, just to get used to that feel and wearing that weight when we were competing, which ended up, I think, working a lot in our favor, even though ultimately the majority of us ended up not using our own personal kit for most of the competition because of previously mentioned luggage delivery issues. But I think that paid off really well, especially for the physical events. We put up some very, very competitive times. Sure. On some of the more physically oriented events, especially the Fallen Comrades Run, which is one of the more renowned events and respected events for there, because it really is paying direct tribute to the Royal Marines and really service members as a whole that gave that final act in combat. So, that's a 265-pound stretcher and a dummy that you have to pick up, move 400 meters, get over there, jam some mags, run back with four 7.62 ammo cans all together. So they the way they have one of their ammo crates is it's four 7.62 ammo cans all together in one pallet with two handles on it, and they had four of those. So there's four of us, there's four of those. We started getting them and took off after it. And then once you get back to that 400 meters, there's 10 plates down there, about 200 meters away, and you guys drop the ammo cans, get into the prone, make ready, and start taking those out. And the time stops once you guys are out of targets to shoot at or out of ammo. And we put up a very, very competitive time. There was only one of the team that came in, and they were just absolute animals when it came to that. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other ones was a 4-mile speed march with full flak and Kevlar into a attack that essentially was supposed to be kind of like a section attack. You take a casualty, evac them 400 meters to the rear, get your ammo, and then attack that 400 meters back forward. And so definitely much more on the endurance side, where you're running at a maybe 7 to 8 minute pace for a couple minutes. You slow down, walk at a brisk pace, and then you pick right back up for 4 miles. That wore on us pretty good. But overall, I think Staff Sergeant Stewart really put together a good plan that gave a lot of us some good preparation, and really prepared us both physically and mentally ultimately for a lot of these events that put a little bit of a physical strain on all of us, and really, really helped put us in a good spot to go and be competitive and do as well as we did.
Yeah, no, that sounds really grueling. How would you compare the physicality of what you did over at Armosk to you've done a tactical games? How would you compare those two?
I can definitely see there are some comparisons when it comes to, everything you do is under load, to where you're wearing a flak and in this case, a Kevlar as well. And you're moving weight, you're moving simulated, casualties. You still have to shoot under duress, be that physical duress, or you're rushed, you're in a time crunch, and you still have to have physical movement that you have to do, just to add on top of things. There's definitely some similarities there. However, tactical games is much more, how quickly can you do it and still be accurate enough? And everything, every single thing is a physical challenge that you shoot. How much you shoot and how much the shooting weighs depends. Whereas everything, with the exception of one or two competitions, was very much marksmanship and accuracy oriented for Armos. The action shooting and PRS, and then the two matches that I talked about with the March and the Fallen Heroes Comrades were a little bit different, but even then it was still very much a focus on how well can you shoot regardless of the situation, because it's expected that you're still going to be with flak and Kevlar. It's expected. It's really how well can you make those rounds count on target, and that's why they had such the scoring rings as tight as they did on a lot of these targets, to really, really make sure you're really controlling your shots and being able to get back in a good settled place quickly, regardless of if you just sprinted 100 meters or carried simulated casualty 400 meters and then some other load back, you still had to do what you had to do. So there's definitely some similarities to draw there, but there are definitely a good number of differences as well.
Yeah, sounds like it. Before we talk about the fun parts of the trip, how'd you guys do? Like, you talked about bringing home some hardware, but just, overall, happy with the performance, pretty gratified. And I'll just open up to the group, like, whoever wants to chime in at this point can just go for it. Chris.
Okay, I guess it's me. All right.
We'll go treat.
Okay. Everybody, I think, did very well. Nobody, absolutely fell on their face or anything crazy, but everybody, I think, did 85% or better, right? That's what we go for, even on our worst days. But definitely, we focused. I tried to implement into the plans of marksmanship, and then with Staff Sergeant Stewart making good PT plans. I think it definitely came together when we got over there, because, again, our biggest concern, like I said when I was on here last, was we're going to have to go in with new weapon systems and kind of not learn from the ground up, but have to find get the muscle memories up to par with bullpups versus ARs. Except for me, nothing changed. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, it was, we had an understanding of what we were doing going in, and the first week was doing the matches, but only counts as practice, and everybody did phenomenal. It wasn't very team oriented. Yes, we are a team, but your score is your score. And then they just, at the back end, will add it up, and that's kind of like your team score for rifle, team score for pistol. So everybody was on their firing point, shooting their match on their own, and everybody did great. It was enough to get us, I think it was a majority of the trophies, outside of some being Royal Marine only trophies, and they also had some heavy hitters over there too, and they had a few individual winners on their side as well. But I think we took a majority of what we could have gotten.
Yeah. I guess how many trophies did you all come back with? Is that 2 or 11?
That's 11.
11. Wow. Double digits. That's really dope. Cool. Chris, how'd you feel like you guys did? I mean, yeah, just for that event.
Yeah, I think we all perform pretty well, considering the fact that 7 of the 8 of us had to relearn a rifle system, since apparently if you're left-handed, you just get handed an M16 variant, basically. Please go on Treat's Instagram and make sure you leave a comment about that. But the SA-80, it's a thing. It does send bullets downrange once you pull the trigger, but that was the first time I shot a bullpup. I think it's the same for a majority of the guys on the team as well. But we picked it up quick. I mean, some of the Royal Marines that we made friends with, they saw the pretty much the ability of everyone at the beginning of the competition, and they did notice that our skill with the SA-80 just kept going higher and higher while everyone else kind of plateaued, essentially. Minus, I had to swap my gun. Something happened with the optic, but...
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was, like, right before the official match day started, so I was going into the match with a general idea of where my holds were. But, you know, a lot of us still toughed it out, even though it's not as pervy as some of the competition guns that we're used to holding and competing with, like sub, yeah. I'm talking like sub MOA guns. These things were...
They're battle rifles, yeah?
Yeah. What was that?
They're battle rifles. Like, they're yeah, not expected to...
They're not... Exactly. They're not expected to hold sub MOA groups, but they're still...
They're still accurate.
Definitely usable. Yeah, they're definitely accurate. And we were able to sweep the competition. I think there were only a total of 22 or 23 trophies. So to take home 11 of those, two of them being the newer trophies they introduced for the action pistol and action rifle matches, I think that's a notable win.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you guys really did fantastic. I got to jump to your defense real quick, Treat. You, life is already hard enough for left-handed people. And I have watched being left-handed fuck you over in multiple ways since we started shooting together. So just for this once, it worked out in your favor. And I'm happy for you, buddy.
Thanks. It's the story of my life. I'm just doing everything backwards. And the one time I finally get a bone thrown my way, I just get shunned by the whole team. Like, oh, wow, you missed one shot in the squall. How dare you? You're shooting a free-floated M16 and an RCO. It's just, it never ended. But it was still fun. And that's a really fun gun.
You all got to look on the bright side. You took a left-handed person into a left-handed country, and that ended up being an advantage. So count your blessings. Fine. I mean, obviously, you know, that amount of trophies, not to mention that you promoted to captain while you were out there. So hell of a trip for you. Sound like how are you looking at it in retrospect?
Well, you know, we brought back a lot of shiny stuff, a lot of it as a team, and I just happened to bring back two extra bars for myself. Okay. So it ended up working out pretty well overall. But no, the guys performed phenomenally. You know, between their marksmanship performance individually, marksmanship performance for the team matches, ability to adapt to guns that we've never shot before, and you know, unfamiliar firearms with the exception of Treat, as we noted earlier, because, you know, like you said, it's got to throw him a bone. But every time that, you know, he'd make one mistake, we had to make sure that we called him out on. You know, you got to keep him honest. But no, it was great. And honestly, it was a really awesome and unique opportunity for me personally to not only just go over there, but also to have the opportunity to promote, in another country, with, our, you know, fellow, forces across the sea and, you know, with my Marines in the middle of a competition as well, that not only that we attended, but we crushed it out. We did really well. And all that coming together. You know, Scottish weather was Scottish weather, but I think the day I promoted, there was just a little extra sunlight. Maybe it was just me. I don't know. But no, it was a great time. We did really well, and I can't say enough good things, about both the interactions with our sister service over there, and just about how the guys conducted themselves. And you know, it's evident in the hardware that we got to bring back. Overall, just a lot of good things to say.
Hell yeah. Well, that's enough talk about the competition. Let's talk about all the other fun things that you guys got to do over there. So obviously, like, you know, you guys talk about hanging out with your foreign counterparts, but talk to me about the places you went, the food you ate. Like, let's hear about the actual the tourism part of about all of this. So Chris, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, Scotland, for one, is probably one of the best places I've been to when we're talking about like scenery and stuff like that. Like, I think we saw three or four castles, went on a couple hikes when we could. And I haven't dropped any photos on our Instagram or anything like that, but I just have some amazing photos from just driving around the countryside and exploring some castles here and there. I think there was an abandoned castle we found, and the greenery was just overgrown. And I wish I had a couple like of my friends that cosplayed. Like, that would have been a perfect place to do a little photo shoot there.
For sure.
And then we also realized that one of the castles, I think it's a Dune Castle from, I'm drawing a blank, but Captain Bod, he made it a note that we had to visit said castle. Sir, you're going to have to help me on this one. I can't. I am
Monty
still
Python in and the Holy Grail and the Outlanders.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Controla. How could you forget the cinematic masterpiece?
It's a generational
produced
thing.
Produced by our brothers across the pond.
We recreated the scene together and everything, and you still forgot.
Yes,
we bought coconuts.
Hey, I bought the coconuts. We did the scene. We got to share that with Frank. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's on par. On par with the original, I'd say.
I believe it. That's pretty awesome. Treat, my favorite thing you saw, favorite thing, favorite cuisine you tried, beer also.
Ooh, favorite cuisine, definitely the haggis by far, right? Mm-hmm. That was the most interesting thing I've had. Surprisingly good. I ate so many different kinds of foods. I don't even think I can name them off right now. Beers, though, they love ciders there, and it just so happens I also love ciders, so I think I had a new cider every day, and I did not have one I didn't pretty much love. Like is an understatement, but they were all delicious. Like the capybaras, the Copperbergs, yes, those are daily. I bought a 12 pack of those, and we have those back on the squad bay. And there's a running joke with that, but those were like the standard there, and it was amazing. The castle, like Chris was saying, was definitely the Buchanan Castle, the like old decrepit one that's falling apart, was my favorite one, because it's like, except for the stairs there, it looked like, I compare the stairs to a child building a stairwell in Minecraft. It is just a wall and then just bricks hanging off a ledge. And I went up the stairs. I was a little scared, not gonna lie. I'm not scared of heights, but it's the fall that'll get you, mm-hmm. with also tons of bricks falling on you. But they look a little sketchy. There was one part that was already falling out, and they just had wood planks that we would walk up that were very it was sketchy. It was very sketchy.
Yeah.
But it was a great time. And then Edinburgh Castle that we unfortunately didn't get to go into, but just the view of it on the hilltop from the lower part of the city was a great view. And yeah, everywhere there was always something to look at that was just breathtaking, if you will.
Yeah, sounds so. I looked up haggis because I've heard of it before, but haggis is a savory pudding containing sheep's pluck minced with onion, oatmeal, sweat, spices, and salts, mixed with stock and cooked while traditionally encased in an animal's stomach, though now an artificial casing is often used instead. Did they tell you what it was before you tried it? And I guess, was it just extremely, it sounds like a very rich dish.
It surprisingly is. I definitely say, don't think about what you're eating while you're eating it. So yeah, definitely don't knock it till you try it. It's also illegal in the US since the 1970s, probably for a good reason.
Huh. Okay.
We did some research on this.
I bet. I just saw the tip of the iceberg here. And then the follow-up question I had for you is, did you guys try to outdrink any of the sister services, and were you successful?
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that one. Did we try to outdrink any of the sister services? No. We did not have any outright drinking competitions by any means. but we certainly have upheld naval traditions of enjoying adult beverages in good company. That being said, the Brits do love a good night out. And who are we not to have them go out without proper company? And if you had to count by the number of people that finished tonight, don't worry, everyone made it home safe. It's just how coherent everyone made it home. It seems that they like to go a little harder in the paint, a little quicker than some of us. And, you know, it overall, no matter what, it was always a good night. It was a safe night. And it was the good memories were made on all accounts. But
I have no doubt. That wasn't meant to be a leading question. It only came up because I made friends with a Royal Marine when I was in Lejeune. He was attached to Radio Battalion. And I tried to keep up with him one night, and it just didn't work out. This guy would also open beer bottles with his teeth. Like, he would just, like, every single time. And he was, I have no idea. Like, that man's ability to just destroy beers was astounding to me. But yeah, Bod, favorite memory, favorite thing that you ate, tell us about it.
Okay. So, Control already hit on it a little bit. Getting to see Dune Castle. So growing up, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the cinematic masterpiece that it is, and the incredible piece of humor that it entails. It was really awesome personally, just being able to go to the cast and be like, holy crap, this is, I got to see and be at this place. That was really cool. Personally, while that was a really cool place to go visit from a touristy perspective, one of the places that I appreciated the most was actually over by Loch Lomond. I asked the guys if they wanted to go over to that side during a little bit of liberty that we had, just because, you know, I heard a song or two about Loch Lomond. We found this one place called the Devil's Pulpit, which was this crazy. It looked like it was in the middle of a field. You go down into this draw, and it's just kind of covered by trees. But then as soon as you get to the edge, it is a like 60 to 80 foot just straight drop down into blood red waters. Wow. It was really crazy. And so getting to go down there, explore that, and see it was it kind of made a lot of sense to me how if I was like a, you know, an 8th century serf over in England, I come across this place, the first thing popped in my head was like, oh no, yeah, totally, this witchcraft definitely occurs here.
Nope, the operative word.
There's so much nope going on there, especially if you would go at like one of the transition periods between light and dark. But it was super cool to go and see that along with all the castles that you would just see randomly throughout the countryside. I mean, they were everywhere. Big, small, occupied, run down and busted up. They were all over the place. That was, I would say, some of the really, really cool stuff. I will say, as commenting on the food, not sure how I feel about having beans for breakfast every day. It definitely had predictable repercussions, I mean, it was what it was, and I'm still a firm believer that bacon should be what we as Americans consider bacon, and not slightly fried strips of ham. But all things considered, it still was all right. And their vat chow, when we had that for lunch in the afternoons, I will say was pretty tasty. It was pretty good. And I don't know what they do with pies over there. We consider them a sweet treat there. That's just the means in which delivering food. So there are a lot of very savory pies, and a couple of pie shops nearby that we got to try that were pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty impressed by their pie making abilities.
Yeah. Every culture has a carbohydrate, vehicle for meal delivery, whether it's a tortilla or a dumpling or ravioli. So it's just happens to be what they have over there. For anyone listening, I'm looking at a Atlas Obscura link to the Devil's Pulpit, and these pictures look amazing, and also I guess you would call it vaguely demonic based on the lighting and certain ones. That looks, and I bet there probably wasn't a lot of people there either, right? This looks like a pretty remote spot.
Yeah, it was literally kind of like this turn in the middle of nowhere. You'd pass by it completely unassuming if you didn't have an idea about where you're going. There's a little pull off there, but you know there were some people around, so you weren't like completely alone. But it was definitely very much a you had to travel to this place intentionally, otherwise you would never know it was there.
Yeah, no, that looks gorgeous. Okay, so we talked about our sister services, about drinking with them and hanging out with them. And we'll stay with you, Bod, but when talking with other countries' Marines, what similarities or differences stood out to you?
A lot of the similarities is, you know, just kind of approaches to wanting to be proficient in you know, our career, in our craft. A lot of that was the same. And, you know, it was nice that, you know, we spoke English generally the same. For the most part, we could understand each other there, you know, but there's some key pieces of lingo that are different over that we have versus what they have. So kind of learning some of their lingo. They call it bootneck. I think it's bootneck or something like that. The way that they talk and the little isms that they have was, you know, kind of just seeing the other side was definitely an interesting thing to experience. And it was all the different accents coming from one small island, all different regional dialects. You know, you kind of don't think about it too much when you think about it in the U.S. Like, you know, we have different regional dialects, but just the vast difference between some of them there was kind of crazy, and seeing it all put together in one was a lot of fun. But yeah, no, it was fun. And honestly, they have downright some of the most impressive mustaches I have ever seen. So you know, while Treat might be able to grow a half decent mustache, I don't think that he's got anything on the Brits over there.
Well, sure. Their grooming standards are a bit more lax, so they can experience the full stash as in ways that we can't. At least those of us that can grow facial hair. That's not me. Yeah. What'd you notice, Chris, based on your interactions out there?
I think the phrase same, same, but different really sums it up, because, you know, from one Marine Corps to another, we're seeing the same, almost the same, pretty much the same culture, and it's wild how similar we are, concerning that, you know, we are vastly, you know, miles apart, literally different continents, and but the culture is still the same over there. You know, we have our little Lanskuli underground over here. They have something similar. I can't remember the phrase they have for it, but the same problem slash the same you know, gripes, moans, complaints that we have, they have a version of it over there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that did throw me off is a little of the colloquialisms or the terms that they use. I think something that sticks with me is like happy days, at pretty much translating to like, are you ready? Is everyone good? To that extent. It's just small things that we slowly caught on to. And that's all just, you know, being from where we're from, and that's just a cultural difference. But for the most part, we got along pretty well with our brothers and sisters from the Royal Marines.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. Was there anything that kind of blew your guys' minds about the way they did business or just the way they handled things? We focused a lot on the similarities, but was there like a cultural difference that was just like, bah?
Not to me. It all, like I said, it almost felt like I haven't left the Marine Corps, or at least stateside, because they're, you know, they had their hurry up and wait, and we experienced that very well. If anything caught me off guard was the hot chow that they brought out day one. It was just straight, really good pasta and meatballs, I think. Whenever I talk about culture, like I like to look at the food that surrounds that culture, and that gives me a solid indication of like what I can expect. And that was my first experience with it, and I was like, all right, these guys know how to hang.
Yeah, how to throw down. I don't know if that's so much a cultural issue as it is the fact that Sodexo just hasn't been able to get across the Atlantic Ocean. But happy that you guys were well fed. That's always a good thing. Treat, any of those interactions, like similarities, differences that stood out to you?
Yeah, so talking about food while we're on the topic, the lunch that they would bring us, it was always pasta, but it was always good, which holds nothing to the jelly donuts you would always get.
Ooh.
Never thought I would get a jelly donut while on the range, but ooh. I'm convinced if Sodexo could bring those out for like box chows, I'd probably re-enlist for that because they were delicious too. Cultural differences, like they were both saying earlier, how we're the United States and we all majority speak English, but we all have different ways of speaking it. It's definitely the same over there. I could understand some better than others, and I'm sure none of them could understand me when I started rambling. But yeah, same thing. And I had a conversation with a dude, and I was just lost. I was like, I'm trying. And luckily, he had a guy who was like, what he's trying to say is this. And I was like, yeah, I didn't catch any of that. He was throwing all kinds of slang at me at once, and my brain could not process it fast enough. But it was interesting. Like, once I figured out what all those terms meant, I was like, wow, all right, that's a lot. But yeah, they were awesome people to talk to when we had downtime, and great competitors as well.
Great to hear it. Last question I'll ask you guys before we turn it over to you to share any reflections. But when you meet other cultures, other professional services, usually there's some level of material exchange, whether it just be patches or challenge coins or just other trinkets. So did you all manage to bring back any souvenirs? And what'd you guys bring over with the purpose of exchanging things? Great.
I would love to go first on this. I had a whole bag dedicated to gear I was going to trade. And it was also one of the pieces that was lost by the airlines.
No.
So by the time I got it, there was little time to convince them to trade something with me. But yeah, I brought out like 3 Gore-Texes, a bunch of patch stickers, all this stuff. Got lost, finally got it. And then we're going to go to one of the commando places that was nearby, but ended up not. And yeah, I just came back with all the stuff I planned on not bringing back. But they did. Fortunately, at the award ceremony, we traded gifts. We gave them something. They gave us some coins, and then also one of their qualification patches was super cool. It's something they sew on their Blues uniform, or their version of the Blues uniform. And it was a really, really cool gesture they did for us. And I definitely have it on my little I Love Me shelf right now. It's definitely not coming off anytime soon.
Yeah. Glad you got something, and sorry to hear that the airline craziness also impacted that. Chris, what about you? Souvenirs?
Yeah, we all brought a bunch of like patches and stickers and things like that to trade. I don't think we got enough like mingle time per se to make some solid trades. I did bring one patch back, a commando patch back, and I gave a couple of the MTU guys a Marine Corps shooting team patch, so was able to do that. Primarily brought back some whiskey. I don't know if we've touched on that yet, but we did do a couple of whiskey tours and hit up a couple places that the Royal Marines definitely recommended. But those were pretty much the souvenirs I brought back.
Very cool. Bud?
I was lucky enough that kind of just in stride, one of the guys was like, hey, that's a really cool patch. It was one of our shooting team patches. Like, great, you want to swap for it? And I was able to swap one of their patches for that one. So I was able to get a little bit of a trade in there. And then yeah, we brought a gift over, because when they came over, they brought over a hey, thanks for having us. So we were like, absolutely, we got that. We're gonna bring it over. So we put one together with a K-bar, each one of our ranks, one of our patches in there, put it in a shadow box, and put a little blurb on the bottom, saying thanks for everything, the times and all that, and handed that to them. And I thought, well, it's not right if we don't hand it off with you know, something to celebrate with as well. So I got them a nice bottle of Basil Hayden's dark rye, and then I got them the most patriotic bottle of whiskey I could find, which was 1776 with a "Do Not Tread on Me" flag on the back. And I gave that to them as well as personally. I was like, hey guys, I think this would go well. You know, I really enjoy this one, and this one's really just to really wash it down and enjoy it with, and they got a good kick out of that. And then beyond that, they did something that was really cool. So one of the sayings that we had as a team, just kind of rolling with it and all the different hiccups we had, was just, I think Staff Sergeant Stewart started it, but you get that on these big jobs. And so we said it so much that it became a regular saying for everyone there, to include the Brits. And the awesome part is at the last day when we were exchanging gifts and pleasantries, they surprised us with a small statue, and on the bottom of it, they had engraved, "You get that on these big jobs." And it was a statue of one of their guys in an operational uniform, like he would be out if he was deployed somewhere. And I thought that was really cool, and that was one of the cool things that they did for us, and we brought that back. So that's currently hanging out in the Downrange Club. We're very, very proud of that one. That was great. Naturally, when you're over there, you're in Scotland, you got to buy a good bottle of scotch. So Treat and I found this whiskey place that only had these real local ones, and ended up getting a real nice locally produced small batch whiskey that we even got to try one of the sister bottles out of the same cask from. It was great. And now I've got a good bottle to pop on real special occasions.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome that you guys were able to put this together, that you're able to go there, that you're able to continue this, you know, illustrious tradition that has its own history, but creates a new history at the same time, you know, share some inside jokes and come away with some trophies. At this time, like, anything else that you guys would like to say? The floor is open to you guys. Any closing comments on the trip?
I'll lead. I'm really happy that we were able to put this all together and make it go on. Hopefully this leads into us kicking off a regular series of competitions and interactions with the Brits, where they come over, train with us, we go over there, train with them, more than you know, any other, you know, times in the fleet when, you know, you do a joint exercise. Because really it was our marksmanship cadre for the service component interacting with their marksmanship cadre for the service component and representatives from each of their major commands, and getting it all together and interacting with them in that way was something that was really, really just personally satisfying and reinforcing that, yes, I think we're doing the right thing. We're going the right way. And, you know, our, you know, sister services across the seas believe that too. That's why they brought over from our competitions what they did and integrated it into theirs. And it was just really personally gratifying to get the guys out there, have that experience, get the balls rolling, and really get back out into the international venue. And I'm really, really looking forward to helping the team over the next year continue that, keeping that ball rolling, and keeping us going out to these international level competitions. And get back out there like we did prior to COVID. So personally, that's one of the things that I'm really grateful for, really happy for, and personally very proud of, both the guys and just the opportunity to be a part of it.
Very well said, Chris.
Yeah, it was honestly a great opportunity, and I'm really thankful for being selected and being one of the people to experience pretty much like this, I guess, the restart of a really good potential relationship with our sister services. And, you know, when we say competition breeds excellence, like I hadn't felt that except for at MCMIX and RMOS. Like there are people out there that really are passionate about marksmanship and being like, being well-rounded warriors, and so if we continue to do this, I think we're all just going to be better overall. not only in just the United States Marine Corps and in the shooting sports, but also, you know, as a united team across like the nations and stuff like that, you know.
Very cool. Trey, finish it up.
I mean, I definitely say if you ever get the opportunity to travel ever, definitely take the leap and go for it. Especially Scotland, just because I love all the views. And I'm sure it has anything you could think of within reason. And also, if you ever have the opportunity to interact with not just other services, but different cultures, it's a great time to really like open your mind and see how other people live their lives. Like, they drive on the wrong side of the road, not us. And just interact with them, like, what are their perspectives on things, and just small talk with them, and you'll learn so much about how things are so similar yet so different, being that far away. And just great experience. Like, from last time or last year, my first time in Oki was a culture shock to me. Now this one, still being able to speak English, but things still being so different. Not as much of a shock, but it's still eye-opening to see how things are so different across the world.
Yeah, amazing. Appreciate you guys, you know, giving us the time and talking about your experience. Appreciate you guys putting up with all the BS on the logistics and airline losing all that stuff. It sounds like all the pain was worth it. It sounds like you guys forged some real connections over there. You obviously did wonderful at the competition, but hopefully this is a indication of more things to come, more partnerships. And it'd be great to have those guys over, and I'm sure you guys wouldn't turn down a chance to go back across the pond once more. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your listening platform of choice. If you have any questions, hit up myself or Matt. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.